It's the Confluence, where the news comes together on 90.5 WESA. I'm Kevin Gavin. For his first audit, Allegheny County Comptroller Corey O'Connor plans to look into the effectiveness of subsidy programs, tax increment financing, or TIFs, and Local Economic Development Revitalization Act, or LERDES. Both are meant to encourage private development in the county. Comptroller O'Connor joins us now. Welcome back to the program.
Thank you, Kevin. Thanks for having me back.
A quick definition, TIFs divert tax proceeds from the property being developed to pay for on-site infrastructure improvements, while LERDA forgives taxation on the property for a defined period. Why did you choose these tax break development tools as your first audit? Has it been a while since they were? Were there some red flags that caught your attention? Why?
Yeah, so they have not done this countywide since 2017. When I was on city council, we actually passed a bill, myself and Councilman Gross, I believe, co-sponsored it a few years back, where our controller did a yearly audit on TIFs and LERDES, I should say. So these are obviously great programs that at the end of the day can benefit a lot of people. But if you're not keeping checks and balances on them, they might only help a select few. Mm-hmm. And I think with the county growing, especially coming into a new world, living in COVID right now, you know, what does that look like? How do we continue to develop, but also how do we continue to put residents first? And that's what these should do. And also, you know, it's also about prevailing wage as well.
Okay. So about how many TIFs and LERDAs the county involved with currently? About.
So TIFs are a little bit less because they go through all three taxing bodies. So going back, I believe the former controller audited somewhere in a total of like 40 to 50. So we're going to do updates on all of those. And they could be anywhere from, you know, $1 million to the one in Hazelwood that I was part of on council is $80 million. Mm-hmm. So you're looking at a variety of funds going everywhere.
You mentioned TIFs in all three taxing bodies. With a TIF, you need the approval of the county, which does property taxes, the municipality where the project is located, and the school district also, which is home to that project. You'll also be looking into if workers on these projects are being paid family-sustaining living wages. Are there concerns developers that get the tax benefits are not paying the prevailing wage as required by law?
I think there's always concerns that, you know, there's a secondary contractor or somebody on site could be paid in cash. We did this as well on city council. We did a tax audit where we were looking at workers on site. And, you know, obviously, if people are being paid cash under the table, we don't know what that number is. And they're also not paying property tax or workers tax in the city or in the county. I shouldn't say property tax, just your employment tax. You might not be paying to the county. Mm-hmm. So people could be getting away with millions of dollars of taxes that they're not contributing to our region.
And if they're not paying these prevailing wages, what happens?
So that's the good conversation to have. And that's why we want to investigate. Is there something where we can, you know, you lose a couple years on your LERDA? Do you have to renegotiate your TIF and you have to pay it back sooner? I think there can be a lot of penalties. Now, we would not be the ones penalizing, but we would bring it to the forefront and then see where the other taxing bodies do with it. But I think it's a good conversation to have to make sure people are being paid a living wage.
Is your audit meant to determine if recommendations from the 2017 one that you alluded to led to improvements, internal controls, oversight, documentation? Is it more than just some housekeeping, updating the books? What could be the outcome?
I think it's one, updating the books, but then also doing this yearly. I mean, just because you got something 5 years ago, we shouldn't get you off the hooks. We should always look into it because you're getting taxpayer money. And we want to make sure that taxpayers and their workers on these sites are getting paid what they should be.
So you served on city council. You mentioned some big ones in the approval of TIFs. What makes a good tax deferment or tax forgiveness deal?
So I think if it really has to be about revitalization and giving people opportunities. So the one that we did in Hazelwood for $80 million, trickled off an effect that when that project is fully completed, you'll be looking at over $1 billion invested in that community. That's just on the site. If you go outside the site, there's a couple hundred more million dollars. But we really want to make sure that by these funds going to those neighborhoods, it benefits residents. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we can't look at gentrification. We have to make sure that there are maybe memorandums of understanding with neighbors so that they can work on these sites as well. It's all about opportunity and where these funds go to.
Okay, less than 2 minutes to go. The previous audit indicated that subsidies might not have been necessary. Are government bodies giving away too much to lure developers?
And I think that's the bigger conversation. I mean, if there's somebody that can do these projects by themselves, yes, there's a way that we can spend that money elsewhere and put it into neighborhood revitalization, into building wealth in communities that haven't seen it in a long time. And I think that's the conversation that we'll have after this. Mm-hmm. You know, was somebody given $2 million and the entire community didn't benefit? That's what we have to look into, making sure that everybody benefits from every tax dollar that's spent on these larger development projects.
I remember your father, the late Mayor Bob O'Connor, I believe he was on council at the time. He was not happy with the TIF granted to the parent firm of Lazarus Department Stores, which built a department store in downtown Pittsburgh that failed after 5 years. I think he said you could shoot a cannonball down the aisle and never hit anyone. So will you be looking at successes and failures as well?
Yes, we should, because ultimately this is taxpayer money. So if one project failed, why did it fail? And what can we do in the future to ensure that these projects don't and that they help more people, especially when you're talking about workers and getting people prevailing wages and allowing residents in neighborhoods that haven't seen opportunity in a long time to get those opportunities they deserve.
And briefly, when do you expect to complete this audit?
So right now we're on a federal audit that should be done early September. Hopefully this is done in October and we get these results in the springtime.
Allegheny County Comptroller Corey O'Connor, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you. Take care.
It's The Confluence on 90.5 WESA. I'm Kevin Gavin. The November election is 13 weeks from today, and candidates are doing their best to turn out voters on their behalf. But groups who are not advocating for particular candidates are also hard at work simply getting people to vote, registering eligible voters, helping them understand the process, and giving them the tools they need to cast that ballot on November 8th. With us now is Kedita Kenner, Chief Executive Officer of the New Pennsylvania Project, a voting rights organization. Kedita, welcome.
Thank you for having me. Good to see you, Kevin.
Kedita, currently, according to the Pennsylvania Department of State, there are 8.7 million Commonwealth residents registered to vote. That was as of August 1st. And the deadline to register to vote for November is October 24th. How many adults in Pennsylvania are eligible but maybe let their registration either lapse or never signed up at all?
Unfortunately, a lot more than the 8.7 million who are registered. There are currently in this moment 1.7 million Pennsylvanians who are eligible to vote but not registered or not voting consistently and have dropped off the voting rolls.
Mm-hmm. So how does your organization model differ from maybe other voting rights organizations? What's your approach to getting people involved?
Yeah, it is our theory of change that we want to do this work year round. So we're not just knocking on doors. We're not just outside tabling at events or outside your grocery store trying to register folks 2 months ahead of an election. We do this work year round. We also hire from within the community. We are hiring people, their own Stacey Abrams of the block, to do this work on a year-round consistent basis so that we can help these communities build power and exercise their right to vote.
Stacey Abrams, of course, the Democratic gubernatorial candidate in Georgia and a voting activist in her state. So you said year-round, but does that also mean the off-year elections, or do you just wait for the big ones, the midterm and the presidential?
Absolutely not. Those quote-unquote off-year elections are probably more consequential than even the big federal elections. And so we are doing this work all year long, every year. We plan to be in existence through the 2024 election and hopefully beyond that, so we can encourage all Pennsylvanians to exercise their freedom to vote.
So It's community up registration, would you say?
Community up registration, you said?
Yes. You know, it's sort of at the grassroots level and getting the community involved. So the community getting the community involved.
Absolutely. This is all about the community. As I mentioned, we're hiring from within the community to engage their own community because they are the trusted messenger. No one can talk to McKeesport the way someone from McKeesport can talk to McKeesport. No one can engage Penn Hills the way someone from Penn Hills can engage Penn Hills. And so we are absolutely grassroots in this work and trying to lift up the communities in which we engage.
So how many, what's your goal? How many you'd like to register by November, actually by October 24th, which is the deadline to register for this particular election?
Absolutely. We're hoping to get to the 30,000 mark by the November election. We have a big task ahead of us. We are halfway to that goal, but we know that the next 2.5 months is crunch time. This is the crucial time in which most people are now starting to get more engaged. They're starting to see commercials on their TV, or they're starting to see yard signs out in the community. And so we are really hoping to register another 15,000 Pennsylvanians to register to vote in the next 2.5 months.
Do you track how many turnout? You registered these 30,000. Do you track how many actually cast ballots? Not who they voted for, but they actually followed through with the next step.
We will. Now, we're a newer organization. We were only founded in May of last year. And so we have had some success. We're a statewide organization as well. We spent a lot of time out in the Collar counties of Philadelphia leading up to the May primary. And we absolutely saw success in the areas in which we were immensely engaged, such as the city of Norristown in Montgomery County, or the city of Chester in Delaware County. And so we saw the numbers improve and upwards of 60% increase in voter turnout in areas in which we were truly engaged. So we're really looking forward to seeing the impact of our work because, you know, you can register as many people as you want, but if they're not actually turning that voter registration form into a registration card and then a voter, all this work is for naught. So we're trying to create voters, not just collect voter registration forms.
Do you think it's lack of awareness or people don't care whether they vote or not? Maybe they're just plain fed up and maybe they think their vote doesn't matter.
There's a lot of that, and that's across the entire state, not just only in Allegheny County, that there are lots of people in this moment who feel as though their vote doesn't matter. Maybe they cast a ballot for the first time, in 2008 and expected some kind of a huge change in their lives. And when that didn't happen, they got discouraged and they dropped out of the electorate. And so we're trying to bring all those people back in. We're talking to folks who are 40 years old, who have never registered to vote, who are getting them registered to vote for the first time. We're talking to young folks, in particular students in Allegheny County. Allegheny County has right now a current rate of high school students who are eligible to vote only registered at below 15%. Statewide average is 1 in 4 high school students who are eligible to vote are actually registered. But when you look at Pittsburgh, that number is down to less than 15%. And when you look at areas such as East Allegheny, or you look at areas like McKeesport, they're under 5% registration for high school students who are eligible to vote. So we have work to do.
For people who have been historically and functionally disenfranchised, when you speak with them, if they say, what's the point? How do you respond?
Point to that is it could be various things. It's a lot of listening, first and foremost. What has kept them out of the electorate? What has kept them from not casting a ballot? Is it that they're working 2 and 3 jobs and don't have time to spend 90 minutes in line at the polls on a Tuesday in November? We're also trying to counter that by saying, what's there to lose by not voting in this moment? We must exercise our right to vote. That is how we have seen change occur in this country, is that we get out there at record numbers and we make our voices heard. And we vote at the ballot box. And we vote at the ballot box, not just in presidential elections, but every year, twice a year here in the Commonwealth.
Kadita Kenner is the Chief Executive Officer of the New Pennsylvania Project. Kadita, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
It's the Confluence on 90.5 WESA. I'm Kevin Gavin. The film industry in the Pittsburgh region continues to grow and now is getting a boost from the state. $7.6 million to help create a state-of-the-art soundstage at the site of the old Carey Furnaces in Rankin. Pittsburgh Film Office Director Don Kieser joins us now. Hi, Don.
Hi, Kevin. How are you today?
I am well. Thank you for asking. So, Don, why is an old blast furnace site a good one for this project?
Well, first of all, Southwestern Pennsylvania is a great place to make movies, TV, streaming, all of the wonderful entertainment things. We've been very excited about building next to the Cary Furnace site in Rankin on the property owned by Allegheny County now for almost a decade. It's a great location. We use the Cary Furnace all the time for filming, and it's pretty easy to get to, and it's big enough. You can get that big equipment in and out when you're loading in stages and tools that you need to make the movies and streaming entertainment.
A basic question. I mean, most of us have seen film crews at one time or another all over Pittsburgh for various movies and TV shows. So what's the purpose of a sound stage, briefly?
The easy one is so they can go inside and be out of the weather, right? You know, you never know what's going to happen day to day in Pennsylvania. But a lot of times they're building specialty sets. And especially now, with most of the content being created for the streaming channels and the need for them to have further and bigger technology around what's being built, we have amazing crews in Southwestern Pennsylvania. The people that work on these movies, TV shows that you see from here are some of the best in the business. They're getting increasingly better trained, more training, and they're having to use a lot of technology, and you need a place to put it. A soundstage is a fancy name for a big, empty, soundproof warehouse. That's what it is, with a lot of extra bells and whistles on the inside. And we've been repurposing old warehouses. We're very fortunate to have a facility out in Warrendale that used to be an American Eagle clothing distribution warehouse. We have 31st Street Studios, of course, which has been amazing and a great partner. They're right there in the Strip District. They're in the city. We're still going to need those facilities, but we need more room. Last year, we had 11 projects, brought with it over $300 million to Southwestern Pennsylvania's economy. It was a record-breaking year, but we ran out of spaces to put them.
And in fact, I think you used a portion of a closed mall at one time?
We were out at Pittsburgh Mills using a closed JCPenney's for the movie Cha-Cha Real that came out on Apple. It's a little crazy, right? We were that busy. And the amount of work that we're seeing, the amount of economic impact, this was all the grand plan, right? We're going to build this viable economic sector for Southwestern Pennsylvania. We're employing over 20,000 people statewide. It's bringing new money into the economy. And during COVID, it put everyone back to work. But a soundstage is really a controlled environment. They need to be able to make their product. So we're going to create one with our development partners, RIDC in Allegheny County in Rankin. And we're excited about it and really can't wait to get started.
You mentioned state of the art, all the bells and whistles. Have production companies turned you down because the region hasn't had that state of the art facility?
No, but we have a lot of complaints, right? So there's a couple things. People love coming to Southwestern Pennsylvania. We have great locations, great crews, and economically, it's a great place to work. We don't have a nonstop flight to Los Angeles. Number one complaint by my clients. Number two, they want more internal space to work, right? Clean, state-of-the-art, ready to go, that'll subsidize not only or support their technology today, but we're looking down the road where this industry is going to be 10 years from now. And that's what we're hoping to build. Along with our newly created workforce training program that we just kicked off 2 weeks ago, where we're training people directly into working with our partners at the union, IATSE, the International Alliance of Theatrical Stage Employees. These are going to be direct. It's a pathway to union jobs, and we're excited to kick that off.
So is this as not only more space, more highly tech space, but also another recruiting tool for you?
Absolutely. It's another feather in the cap, if you will, of Southwestern PA. It shows that we're investing in this industry. We're building something for our current filmmakers, our future filmmakers, and, you know, opening our arms even wider to welcoming them to Southwestern PA.
This is
great business.
Ron, how do you build for the future? I mean, how do you know? You've got to project what the future is going to be like and what your needs are.
I pull out my crystal ball like I do every day. I'm kidding. Look, there's a lot of industry experts that know what the industry is headed for. You start talking about artificial intelligence. You start talking about how they're creating virtual stages. So you can stand on a stage and be in Pittsburgh and in Southwestern Pennsylvania, but it looks like you're in the Alps, right? You can create any of those things. And so there's a lot of ideas with the technology companies that know where they're headed. And we want to be a part of that conversation.
I understand that this is one part of a larger goal or plan or vision of Film Studio Campus.
We're calling this the Pittsburgh Film Furnace. The plan is to build 6 sound stages with production office space, then build what we were calling the Village, which was having all the companies that are working in this industry consolidate coordinate, and all be in the same location. We did a study in 2016 that said to centralize our industry would really help grow it. So that's what we've been focused on.
And would this be located at the old Cary Furnace site? Do you have a spot?
That's the plan, right? We're going to have everyone there. We have 57 acres down in Rankin and at Cary Furnace. And working with our IDC in Allegheny County, it's going to be an amazing place when it's completed. We're creating new trails along the river for the public. It's going to be really amazing. And we're going to get started very soon.
Don, Pennsylvania's film tax credit had been capped at $70 million for years. The new budget raises that to $100 million. What's that going to allow you to do?
It'll allow us to create, have one more show come to Pennsylvania. It added $30 million, which sounds like a lot to you and I. The average tax credit on most of the shows have been around $20 million. So it gets us maybe one and a half more shows. We're very grateful and hope to grow it even more.
All right. You're already looking forward to 2023 or just finishing out what you got lined up for this calendar year?
Oh, I'm looking forward to 2023. We're busy right now. We have Mayor of Kingstown season 2. We have The Deliverance being directed by Lee Daniels for Netflix. We have American Rust season 2 coming back and just announced yesterday. Ethan Coen's kicking off a feature in about a month here in Southwestern PA. There's more work coming. You'll see those announcements soon, but it's going to be another great record-breaking year in Southwestern PA for the industry.
And finally, Don, so when's work going to begin on the soundstage project at the old Cary Furnace site?
I believe the plan is to break ground in September. We have to do the infrastructure first, and then the stage will be the next thing up. So you should see some stuff. We're already doing work down there, but you'll see an official groundbreaking probably in mid-September.
And when do you hope somebody's actually going to be in that soundstage studio?
In my perfect world, by the end of 23, more likely the beginning of 24.
Don Keyser is the director of the Pittsburgh Film Office. Don, thanks as always for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
And for today, that is The Confluence, where the news comes together on 90.5 WESA. Next time, an update on the planned bus rapid transit project. We talk with the CEO of Pittsburgh Regional Transit. Plus, we remember Pittsburgh native, Pulitzer Prize-winning author, historian David McCullough. Thanks to our team, Nick Konopka, Laura Satsui, and Mary Lee Williams. I'm Kevin Gavin. Until next time, hope you have a good day of good news.